Morning, Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Our next case on our calendar is A19-1863, State of Minnesota versus Rasheem Akeem Figaro et al. Counsel, you're the only one that's appearing, so you have 15 minutes. And please state your name for the record, the party you're representing, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Eric Rice for Anytime Bail Bonds. We're here today to discuss the denial of reinstatement of two of Anytime's forfeited bail bonds. It's kind of a nesting doll of arguments that I have today. First, our main argument is that the district court was required to follow the Shetsky factors, whether to reinstate the bond. The court declined to do so despite three opportunities to consider the issue. Even if this court found that the district court had made proper decisions, the district court used a new condition of release to deny reinstatement of Anytime's bond, and that denial of reinstatement violates the Storkamp decision and was improperly set. And even if this court found that that condition was properly set and the bond could have been denied reinstatement based on that, there was a bond posted by another company that was reinstated based on the exact same material facts, and so the district court's decision would have been arbitrary. And so I don't want to jump through every rabbit hole or go too deep in the woods, but when you look at the overall arc of this case, there's error upon error upon error, and it makes a clear discussion maybe a little bit more difficult. But I want to start at the beginning, is that...
I was going to say, counsel, let's start with your first point. As you indicate that this is a case where the district court failed to follow Shetsky, and I think you've defended that well in your brief. So I guess I'm left with looking at the relief that you are requesting. You're asking this court, I think, if I understand you correctly, you're asking this court to direct that the bond be reinstated. But do we have what we need? We don't have a Shetsky analysis. We don't have Shetsky factors, findings. And therefore, this court really should remand, shouldn't it? So that the district court would apply Shetsky and make the determinations that are required by that.
And there have been numerous decisions where appellate courts have made an independent analysis. They don't find new facts, but they can independently analyze.
And then in a published opinion?
Your Honor, it's been published in State v. Askland, a Minnesota Supreme Court decision from 2010, and that's cited in the brief. And notably in that case, the Minnesota Supreme Court independently conducted its Shetsky analysis, applying the law to the facts that were undisputed in the district court. I believe in the Storkamp decision, also a Minnesota Supreme Court decision, there they reversed a district court's finding under a Shetsky factor and ordered reinstatement and discharge. There are numerous other cases where, again, the appellate court won't find facts if they were not initially presented, and they won't overrule facts that the district court found, but the Shetsky analysis is applying law to those facts. And I think the record in this case is sufficient to allow this court to make that determination.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm clear about. So we can see whether that's really the relief that you want. So one of the Shetsky factors, the second one, is fairly broad in its statement, and I'm just quoting directly, I think, from the Sturkin case, the good faith of the surety as measured by the fault and or willfulness of the defendant, right? And so that's a factor in Shetsky. We don't have a finding of good faith or otherwise by Anytime bail bond. We don't have a finding from the district court. I assume you're going to say, well, but our affidavit gives the court the information that it needs because it shows the good faith of the surety. But what the affidavit, at least what I saw in your petition affidavit, and maybe I'm missing something, is some information about the fault or willfulness of the defendant here, which is failure to appear, I think, is the crucial issue, repeated failures to appear for sentencing. How would this court, in the first instance, when we are not a fact-finding body, how would we make a determination about the fault or willfulness of the defendant as related to the second Shetsky factor?
And Anytime concedes in its brief that that factor would weigh against reinstatement. Without any evidence that the defendant failed to appear to, say, a medical appointment or some excusable reason, this court could find that that factor weighs against reinstatement. But the Storkamp decision, its main holding, and it explicitly directs courts that one factor is not exhaustive. That if that one factor weighs against reinstatement, but the other three factors support reinstatement should still be granted.
Okay, let's look at the first factor then. The purpose, what are the purpose of bail bonds? You know better than anybody.
The purpose of bail bond is to secure the appearance of the defendant. And in this,
right, and we have a defendant here who repeatedly did not appear. And in the record I have, and maybe I missed something, I still don't know whether this defendant has appeared and been sentenced. So as at the time that the district court issued its final order, we still had a failure to appear by this defendant for sentencing. And you avoided that, by and large, in your briefing. You've emphasized the fact that he did appear, and I'm missing my timeline here, but it's somewhere in the June 2019 range. Mr. Figueroa was arrested and appeared, but then he disappeared again and did not show up for sentencing. And for, you know, Midwest fortunately got their bond reinstated in that little gap in time. But that's not what happened.
So the way the process should work, Your Honor, is that the court sets conditions of release. And part of those conditions of release may include posting a bond. As part of posting that bond, a bond company fills out a Form 702 that says, we will secure the appearance of the defendant. There's case law stating that a bond company has to undertake efforts after a defendant fails to appear. The bond company is not penalized for an initial failure to appear, but the Shetsky factors look at, what does a bond company do and what happens after a defendant fails to appear? Do they work to secure the defendant's appearance and bring them back before the court? The Shetsky decision talks about the value of bond as having another actor to bring the defendant back before the court and allow prosecution to continue. In this case, conditions of release were set any time posted its bond, a forfeiture occurred, and any time undertook efforts that are detailed. They reminded the defendant before court. They took efforts to locate the defendant afterward. The defendant was gone for 1 week. The defendant was brought back before the court any time clear of the forfeiture. At that point, the district court can set new conditions of release. If the defendant has shown that the defendant's a flight risk, the district court can set a new bond condition or additional conditions of release to secure the defendant's appearance. Here, the district court did not do that. The district court didn't require the posting of an additional bond. The district court didn't impose additional conditions of release to require the defendant's continued appearance. But the Shetsky, there's no published decision, there's no Shetsky analysis that looks at the overall arc of the case and says, well, if the defendant has failed to appear three times, then the bond shouldn't be reinstated, but, you know, two times is fine. What it's about is the district court looks at those things when setting conditions of release. The district court has that power, not the bond company. The bond company, by state rule, can only charge a certain amount. If the district court sends a $10,000 bond, the bond company can't say, well, you've already not failed to appear twice, so we're going to charge you double our normal rates. The bond can't do that. The district court needs to make that decision to say, you've continually failed to appear, we're going to set an additional bond or a higher bond amount.
Which happened in Mr. Figueroa's case. Additional bonds were required during the arc of his case.
Earlier in the case.
After the forfeiture of the anytime bond, but yes, that did happen during the course of Mr. Figueroa's case. What I'm struggling with, counsel, if you want this court to do the Shetsky analysis, and frankly, I'm trying to be honest with you, I just don't know that we have the tools to do it. This record suggests that, or I fail to see in this record, that anytime has indicated its efforts to secure Mr. Figueroa after the time that it petitioned for reinstatement, because Mr. Figueroa disappeared again on August 30th, and on September 19th is when anytime petitions for reinstatement. At that point in time, Mr. Figueroa was gone. And your affidavit doesn't indicate any efforts.
The issue is that the district court failed to follow the proper procedure, though.
I'm with you on that.
What typically happens, Your Honor, is that, and this is makes it difficult, and that's why it's a nesting doll problem. Because what the district court should have done is reinstated anytime's bond, but not discharged their bond. Other district courts do that often enough where they say, we're going to reinstate your bond because this forfeiture was cleared up, but you are still on the hook to secure future appearances. If the defendant fails to appear in the future, we expect you to go find them again to repetition the court again if you want your bond recovered. Here, the court did not do that. Again, if the court had figured that it wanted to hold the bond companies to that new condition of future appearances, the court should have reinstated Midwest's bond, but not discharged it. Instead, the district court reinstated Midwest bonds and discharged them and basically said, you're done, and waived the future appearance requirement for Midwest. For any time, they didn't reinstate the bond was still in forfeiture status. Any time can't repetition the court for a new failure to appear because it was never reforfeited. It had to work based on the original forfeiture to appear. In all case law, the Shetsky analysis says you just look at that one failure to appear, that one forfeiture event. I said in my brief how the rules are written with the 90 and 180-day deadlines. They're not designed and they're not meant to remain in forfeiture status through multiple appearances or throughout the duration of the case. What we would have asked the court to do is reinstate the bond based on the defendant's absence of 1 week, any time's efforts, and the fact that he was brought before the court to reinstate if the court had decided that reinstatement but not discharge were appropriate, then we might not be here today. Anytime would have repetitioned the court saying, okay, the second forfeiture occurred. Here's our second reinstatement petition, asking that our bond be reinstated again because it was reinstated before. But that hasn't occurred. The district court didn't allow any time to do that because it never reinstated the bond in the first place.
Right. So I'm following you there, but I guess my question is, and is basically similar to what Judge Bradfold said in terms of what specific relief are you asking for? Because I think in terms of us just de novo doing a Shetsky analysis, I have concerns with those two. But even number four, I mean, the state didn't file a brief, but is there any prejudice to the state on the fourth factor? And I don't think we have enough in the record to indicate one way or another. And I'm not so sure we can assume just because the state didn't file a brief that there is no prejudice to them. So aren't you asking for a remand for the district court to either reinstate the bond or apply a Shetsky analysis? Or what specific relief, if there's not enough in the record, if we decide there's not enough in the record for us to do a Shetsky analysis?
Then we would remand with direction for the district court to apply the Shetsky analysis. But I believe there is enough evidence in the record because the district court informally considered the state of the bond and did reinstate and discharge Midwest Bond. That's an indication that the district court found that the initial efforts to clear that forfeiture were sufficient to reinstate and discharge a bond. The bonding company's petition is in the record. The state had an opportunity to present evidence. The state declined. And the fourth factor, the state has the burden to produce prejudice. Here, the defendant had already pled guilty. The defendant had completed a PSI because that allowed the defendant to get back on release. And the state has indicated no indication of its prejudice, and so the fourth factor, because the state has not met its burden, has not produced any evidence, would not weigh against reinstatement. So we'd primarily be asking the court, I believe the record is sufficient to make a Shetsky determination that reinstatement is warranted because factors 1, 3, and 4 do weigh in support of reinstatement. Storkamp says that factor 2 cannot be used exclusively to deny reinstatement. If the court feels that the record's insufficient, then we would ask that it be remanded with additional hearings to permit Shetsky findings, because then we'd have an opportunity to go to the district court, have the district court make those findings, and if there's an issue or error, there'd be a more developed record to have additional proceedings.
So the legal point that you made, counsel, that I didn't appreciate from your brief, and I'm sure it's there and I simply missed it, is that the reinstatement analysis, so your petition for reinstatement should have been granted in the first instance because the district court should have had its focus only on the first, well, it's not actually the first failure to appear, but the June 2019 failure to appear by Mr. Figueroa. Did I get your argument right?
So the way the forfeiture rules work and the analysis works is each failure to appear in forfeiture is a discrete event. So
I understood you to make that argument, and I'm just trying to recap it. So am I understanding that correctly? That's your argument? And if so, what is your legal authority for that position? I didn't glean that from Shetsky. I just reread it just to make sure I was fresh and all the details. So is that where I look for that?
So I look for Rule 702 and Shetsky, and the fact that Shetsky, in its factors, does not and intentionally omits any consideration of additional forfeitures by a defendant or other happenings. It looks at the initial forfeiture, the reason for the forfeiture that the defendant failed to appear, the efforts by the bond company to clear that forfeiture, and the prejudice to the state caused by that forfeiture. There's no analysis of how many before or what's happened subsequent or anything like that. And again, that's the domain of additional conditions of release that the district court sets.
So you're saying I'm going to see that because Shetsky doesn't discuss additional facts after the forfeiture at issue.
That consideration is outside the purview of Shetsky. One additional point I did want to raise is regarding the conditions of release, that the district court setting a condition that the defendant need to make all future appearances or else no reinstatement would be ordered is a violation of Storkamp. That is basically saying that per se, if the defendant fails to appear, that the bond company will not have its bond back, which removes any incentive for the bond company to clear any forfeitures. That was the framework the bond company was working under throughout. And that's a violation of StoreCamp's policy that you can't disincentivize a bond company by conditioning reinstatement solely on the defendant's conduct itself or if the defendant fails to appear. And so if this court gets to the discussion of whether that condition is proper, we would argue that that's a violation of StoreCamp and can't be applied as the district court issued it. But again, that would cause any time to not take additional efforts to clear additional forfeitures, because once the defendant fails to appear, any time's bond is gone anyway. But any time's bond was already forfeited, so they're not getting their bond back anyway. So that's part of the mess of not reinstating and then not discharging.
In other words, you want to make sure that the district court incentivizes the bond company to continue to make efforts to...
That's the whole point of bail, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your briefing. We appreciate you coming in for oral argument. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And that is our last case for oral argument. We have four cases for non-oral consideration. So with that, the court is in recess.